This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like being a writer, but that's only half of it or a third of it.
Right,
you know?
I'm also an idiot.
Yeah. I'm a father, I'm an idiot, and I'm a writer.
Exactly.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter. And I'm a writer. But... Welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Chris Malcolm Belk, whose work has appeared in Granta, Black Warrior Review, The Rumpus, and elsewhere, and has been supported by the Sustainable Arts Foundation. He lives in Philadelphia with his partner and their three young children. Find out more at his website, chrismalcolmbelk.com, chrismalcolmbelc.com. Welcome, Chris.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to be here. And part of the reason why I'm so excited is because there are no more venues for me for reading new work. So I would love to do that.
Yes. Yes. I'm so excited to hear this.
Okay. So I just released a memoir this week and I'm trying to figure out kind of like what I'm doing with my writing life. So I've been giving myself some prompts, and my current prompt is to write about what I made for dinner. That's the like open-ended prompt.
Yes.
So I'm going to read about what I made for dinner one night.
Awesome.
This has not seen any sort of light of day, so you all are my test audience.
That's beautiful. My favorite kind of writing.
Same.
Super. Well, here we go. Anna is in a foul mood, and I ask dumbly, what can I do? So often there is nothing I can say, so little I can do. Today is a day that has run away from us, and it is still running. All morning I was on the phone with work, and Anna was supposed to be cleaning the kids' room, where the dog, with his infernal urinary tract infection, peed this weekend. But instead she was on the phone with auto garages because someone smashed the front windshield of our car yesterday. We stood in the street debating rock or baseball bat while waiting for friends to text us back. It has been called to my attention over the years by multiple editors that I do not know anything about how to use a comma. They do not say so outright, but in the margins, the little comments appear, all of them relating to commas. In drafts, I just put them in where it makes sense and hope for the best. I put them in where it makes sense, comma, and hope for the best. Sometimes I just can't be bothered. In between spending time on the phone and trying to manage our five-year-old, Anna had to walk our friend's car back to her house over a mile away. She had borrowed it to get to work. Maggie lives in a similarly weird part of Philadelphia to ours, kind of full of noise and trash, but you get to walk through the really nice parts to get to it. I Googled tumor subtypes because I did not recognize the acronym the oncologist used in the email. If I write the acronym here, it will become realer than I want it to be. The thing about grammar is that it has nothing to do with how my mind works or remembers. If two things happen in a sentence together, a comma can separate them, but a semicolon will not do because they are happening at the same time. While I am living today, writing my patients' notes in their charts, I am also living yesterday, standing in the street looking at the busted car, quietly wishing we lived literally anywhere else on earth. When I write in my patients' charts, I write choppy sentences requiring no commas. Current concern for the patient is lack of progress in reading. Patient knows some letters and sounds. School has offered small group reading intervention. explained possible impact of oncology diagnosis and treatment on learning, provided materials from Children's Oncology Group. We'll continue to follow reading progress. Please do not hesitate to contact me with further school concerns. What makes someone want to smash a stranger's car? Then I tell myself, look around. It is a heat wave and the drain outside our house smells like absolute death. People have been leaving bulk trash at the end of our street more than ever before. Everyone must be leaving our block or neighborhood or maybe the city altogether. I never see them do it. A few weeks ago, it was an empty printer, not like a laser printer. It was an office copy machine in what may have been its entirety at one point, but soon it became like one of those molded bird feeders, eaten away slowly until a few parts were left and the trash truck finally came to take it away. The thing is, a comma may indicate where you are supposed to pause, but what control do we have over the place where the mind gives itself a minute? While one thing happens, another thing also happens. Our five-year-old has a horrific scrape on their foot and is acting like they cannot walk at all. Without thinking yesterday, I resurrected the stroller from the basement. Without thinking, they became a baby again. Days are not only not moving, comma, they seem to be moving backwards. As a baby, our third child was legitimately my best friend, my only friend when we moved to Michigan. But today, our child was just so in the way of my work and Anna getting anything done. I meant to go to the gym to skip cooking, but instead I stayed. Made sheet pan dinner, chicken and potatoes and cauliflower roasted with whatever random spices I had on hand. I have been listening to a lesbian romance novel in the kitchen to feel something. While I cooked and cleaned downstairs, comma, Anna rage scrubbed the rug in the kids' room free of dog pee. I want to make everything better with dinner. Sometimes you just eat because it's dinner time. Sometimes things aren't going to get better. But of course, there are brownies, my last resort. From start to finish, they take between 30 and 35 minutes. One bowl, no recipe, all things we always have. What is love at this stage in my life but a stupid devotion to trying? That is it.
I can just relate to everything you just said.
That's great. That was great.
Oh, Chris. My God. I can't believe that was just an unedited prompt.
Yeah, everything I write is a prompt, so it's nothing new here.
How do you come up with these prompts? Like, where do they come from?
I don't know. I feel like because I think everyone that you all have on your podcast has a lot going on, but I feel like prompts are fun. And a lot of the stuff I write about, like, isn't that fun. So it's a way for me to like feel excited about what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So like if it has that structure, then it feels like play, even though like my mind is kind of grim and I know that I'm going to end up writing about like hard feelings I have.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to find that way into drafting new work? Was that something that you had to really search for, or was it something that kind of was a natural starting point early on?
I mean, I think like I started off as a fiction writer and I went to graduate school for fiction. I was a pretty untrained writer at that point. I had taken, I don't know, two or three fiction workshops as an undergrad, but I did not study English or writing. And then I worked as a special education teacher for a bunch of years. And then around the time, right before my third baby was born, I decided to go get an MFA in fiction. And I was writing these stories that were like extremely long and plotless, like nothing was happening. And I feel grateful that I got into any schools at all, but it just wasn't working. And I think going to school and being exposed to some more experimental nonfiction and just seeing people do things out of like the truth, and I have a boring life, so I feel like I'm writing about boring things a lot of the time. Like I got ideas that other people had done the same thing, like that they were looking at like documents or photos or, you know, thinking about etymology, which is like kind of a trope in creative nonfiction that I also use, but just people were like assigning themselves things to do. And I was like, that's something that I know I can write successfully. And I just like started coming up with weird prompts, a lot of which never turn into anything and are horrible failures, but like, that's how I keep it fun.
That's awesome.
Where do you keep your horrible failures? Do you ever go back to them?
I have a lot of Google Docs of doom. Yeah. What do you do with them?
You know, I like to visit them and pet them. And I like to, you know, like reassure myself that there's like a good sentence in there sometimes. Although I will say I do have a few that I've never reopened just because I'm just filled with dread even thinking about them. But I was going to say, like, the writing that you just read, I feel like it's an example of something that, like, that your feelings about it might change over time, because it's such an immediate piece, but it's also, yes, it's got this distance to it as well. It's so wise. And I feel like it's the kind of thing that you might, like, read later and think, oh my God, I didn't even notice that in this. And I'm not, I don't know what that is, but it just feels like, it feels like such an honest, I don't know. It feels like something that is like rich with meaning, and even beyond like the meaning that I immediately grasped as you were going. I don't have like anything for you to say after that. It's just, just something that I was thinking about, 'cause I was so moved by it.
I appreciate that. I think like when I started having to talk about my book a lot, which hadn't been a thing until recently, and now I feel like I'm being asked to talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. I am asked about the same things over and over, and I almost feel like my writing right now has this feeling of being like, and another thing, and like, mm-hmm, just like kind of responding to some of these ideas about, mm-hmm, like linear storytelling and why it doesn't mean anything to me, and like family life and writing about dailiness and what do you do for a living, like all of those questions. I just, like, I'm being asked to talk about it, and I'm like, I feel like I can write better than I am performing in any of these like times when I'm prompted to talk about the book in a structured setting, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It does make sense.
Was there anything that you were asked that like surprised you?
I got asked about my partner and me meeting playing rugby, which is something that no one has ever like, key detail. And I'm like into working out, so I'm always into talking about that. It's like taken different forms in my life. It's very like interesting to me that new Alison Bechdel book just came out that's about just like fitness throughout the lifespan, because I feel a lot of like kinship with that.
Is it out already?
It is, yeah. Oh. I got it the day that it came out, because I have no self-control. I was like,
no, I love Alison Bechdel.
Yeah, it's good. It's very different. It's very colorful. But I
are you still doing CrossFit?
Oh, that's what I was just gonna ask.
I am doing CrossFit. I didn't do it like during the pandemic. For a long time, because like the pandemic was happening, and they had their different, I go to like a very progressive queer owned gym that's like not actually affiliated with CrossFit anymore. It's one of those like gyms that used to be a CrossFit gym that then divested from CrossFit. And I just went back like 2 or 3 months ago, and I'm in absolutely the worst shape of my life, like way worse than postpartum, which is like I thought would never happen to me. But it's okay. It's all acceptance of the body as part of my life project. So I'm trying to be there.
Yeah. Man, ain't it the truth?
I'm not successful at it, but that's what I'm trying to tell myself. You know, it's like a fake it till you make it type of thing.
Yep.
So what, when you were actually, I'm sorry, the CrossFit, I have one more CrossFit question. Yeah, when you were really in it, let's say pre-pandemic, or, you know, whenever you were going most often, you were going like 2 or 3 times a week doing that?
No, that's definitely not how much I was going when I was most into it. Like,
okay,
I was most, so my journey with CrossFit is long. It's in the book, like it comes up in different contexts just because it's been with me for a long time. So I was a competitive Brazilian jiu-jitsu athlete in my young adulthood. I like was really into jiu-jitsu, and I did it like every day after work. Like I would go teach, and then I would go to the gym and just like be on the mat for like hours and hours, and that was my everyday. And I was married, and Anna's always worked nights, and we like our separate times, so it was like a great, like I just had this thing that I did all the time. And at one point, my coach, I was never that like actually good at the competitive part, but I really enjoyed the sport. And my coach told me that I should drop a weight class and I would have a better time like at tournaments. And we were not like bosom buddies. So he didn't know, like, I have a history of eating disorders, which I all like, I really write about everything in my book because it's formerly private thoughts that are now public thoughts. But yeah, I wasn't going to be like, no, Phil, I had anorexia. I can't do that. I was instead like, I am going to be the strongest lightweight on earth. Like, I need to like get so much stronger. So I joined a CrossFit gym. And that was when like Anna started doing CrossFit right before she got pregnant with our first kid. And she's like, not an athlete. It was like, how can I make adult friends? This seems like a place where people go to make friends. And I just got really into it. And I kind of stopped doing jujitsu when we had our first kid. And I probably then started going to CrossFit. Like, I was probably going 4 or 5 times a week at some
point. Oh, my Lord.
It's just an hour. It's like it's so doable with our life and schedule for me to say, like, I'm going to go somewhere for an hour and 10 minutes with drive time versus being like, I'm at jujitsu and I'm like kind of training and I'm kind of chatting and we're doing matches and then we're resting and then we're doing more matches and it's like 3 hours. Like, that's not doable for my life. So this is better. But now I probably go like twice a week. And then I like half-heartedly jog around Philadelphia while listening to podcasts.
I used to run and train for races and stuff. And now when I see people doing that, I'm like, ugh. I'm so glad that's not me. Oh,
man. I am like a struggle runner. Like, you would not think.
Do you find any like, I think about this all the time. Like, there's an endurance to working out, and especially the kind of working out you're talking about, and an endurance to sitting down and getting the work done. Do you find like, cause you're adept at giving yourself these prompts and, you know, and sort of like being patient with yourself in terms of like figuring out where your writing is going. Do you feel like there's like a crossover there? Does the working out part of your life speak to the writing part of your life and vice versa?
I do. I mean, as toxic and like gender weird CrossFit is, especially, it's been weird for me throughout the span of CrossFit because I was like a competitive women's athlete when I started and then I started a testosterone. So I've like done all of the different iterations of like being a female athlete, being a male athlete. Now I'm like, I look like a dude, but I haven't taken hormones in a really long time. So like, I'm not actually strong anymore. So there's a lot of gender weirdness with it. But what I love about CrossFit is that they tell you what to do. I love that about it. That's what I liked about playing organized sports and what I could never get into about like just going to the gym to lift weights or run on the treadmill. I'd be like, well, I can stop at any time because no one told me to get on. that's, I think, why I started doing this prompt dependent writing, even though I'm the only person that I'm trying to please. I'll like set a deadline that I'll be like, this contest is open or like whatever it is at the time, or this journal that I like is opening for submissions, then I'll just like write to that and I'll have a prompt in mind to do. I'm like there's a section in the book that's a series of flash essays that are all titled by words that first appeared in print in the year I was born. That like clearly just a weird made up prompt like that. So it's like just a conceit that I had, but I wrote that essay. I had a winter break from school and my kids were off from school and we were really broke. So Anna signed up to work like 7 night shifts in a row, like 12 hour nights.
Oh my God.
And I was Jesus. Like, this is just like such an endurance event for everyone in our family getting through this like winter break. And there's 10,000 feet of snow outside. And I was like, but this is a doable thing. I wanted to write something over winter break and this is going to be fun. And I'm just like reading the dictionary and I have these 12 words and I'm going to just try to write things that come from it. And like, I don't think that it came together in a week. Like, that is not my process, but it helps me do something.
Yeah. It's like keeping it alive, you know, like just always dipping in.
Yeah. And I know that people write just some of the people that I follow on Twitter, their word counts are terrifying to me, and their working behaviors are terrifying to me.
They're lying. Okay.
I'm trying to think of someone, I don't know Matt Bell, but he taught MFA program where I went, and I'm like, is this real?
Matt Bell doesn't sleep. That's the only thing that makes sense. Because not only is he writing 4 million books a year, but he's also living a rich life.
And running, it takes time to run miles, even if you run fast. I know that much. So
I know. And he's like, and then I cooked this pizza, homemade, vegan, whatever. And then this is the beer I brewed. And I don't think he's closed his eyes in 8 years.
Yeah, I can't relate to any of that. I don't work out at all. Zero. I can't even imagine incorporating in my week twice. So I'm impressed by anybody who's able to work out and get any writing done and be a parent and have a job. That's amazing.
I have to. This is my first desk job I've ever had in my life, and I've had it now for almost 2 years, and I've never lived a 9-to-5 life. And when I don't exercise, I'm so tired from sitting and looking at my inbox. Yes.
Oh God.
Yeah. It's weird how it actually gives you more energy. I mean, it's true what they say, it sucks.
God, that's what I hate about it. It's like, I feel so much better. It's like, God damn it.
I feel the same way recently about writing in the morning, which I'm trying to do recently for the first time ever in my life, writing before. Now my kids are old enough where I'm not worried that they're going to do something terrible if I'm not watching them. So I've tried to write early, and I'm like, unfortunately, this is really good for me. I don't want to be, I want to sleep, but it actually is
okay. I know. I'm heading into summer break. And so my 8-year-old's going to be out of school, and my 5-year-old has been out of school, and I have a 3-year-old as well. And so I'm like, okay, oh, it's hitting me that I will have no time to write during the day. So I've been doing the same thing. I've been waking up early and writing, and it's crazy how much better I feel throughout the day knowing that I've done my writing. Like I got into it, and I don't have to spend all day going please leave me alone for 20 minutes or an hour.
I know. And I always would be I'm going to do it during nap time. But then when I had kids who were of napping age, but then my house would be so utterly destroyed.
Yes.
We've had every iteration of who works what hours, but I'm the one who has for most of our time with children spend more time at home doing domestic labor, and nap time is straightening up time. I could never make it anything else. I deeply admire people who can write while their children are asleep. Yeah.
Yes, but my home is a disaster. it's something always has to give, and that's the thing that as an Aries type A personality is very hard for me to accept that, so it's I'm coming to peace with it.
I'm glad. I'll get there one day, right?
One day. Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
The guilt.
Chris, I was so curious after reading your book about the drafting process, because it seemed like this book could have been much longer or much shorter, just in a way where I think it's the right length. It is as it should be, but just it's so rich, and you're pulling so much from your own life, whether it be obviously the text, but the documentation throughout. And it seemed like because you were pulling from some of the most personal stories you have, I was wondering if it was difficult to know what to tell. I don't know. I couldn't wrap my head around this, how personal it was, and just how to edit a piece like this, how to edit a book like this.
Yeah, well, so I feel really lucky. I have heard a lot of your guests be really open just about their ambitions and their hopes for submissions and agents and editing and their careers and all of that kind of stuff. I know that it's a short book by word count. It looks normal, you look at it on a bookshelf in terms of its size, but the word count is kind of it's on the low end, and it's 42,000 words. And I was concerned that I would be told to do a lot of things with it, like make it more linear, make it make sense, don't change the POV over and over. There's too many pictures. Like I had all of these like almost voices in my own head that never really came to fruition in the process of like making the book. I was very helped by the fact that, like, to go back to my prompt-driven life, like, I always knew that if I wrote a memoir, like, I read so many memoirs when I decided to start writing nonfiction, which I did not go to school for, but then switched into while I was in school. And I was like, I gotta read, like, as many memoirs as I can to just, like, start to figure out what they are before I become, like, an intruder in the genre overnight. And I really liked memoirs that had sections like you where you could talk about one part of your life or use one form, and then you could just like reinvent the way that the story is being told. Like I always was very drawn to that because it's exciting to me as a reader. And was like, I was like, I could say anything if I had the right form. Like I very much like was, it felt a lot less personal and intimate while I was writing it than it did. Like, I know, Lindsay, you said you are listening to the audiobook. Like, that honestly, the book was done. And when I sat in a studio, it took like one day and then 1 hour. Like, I did it basically like very quickly. I was like, this is really personal. I just so obviously like a book goes through, like I did so many like edits of all of it over and over again, like with my agent and then with my editor and then like copy it. Like I did all of the normal processes of editing, but I was so focused on what it looked like and what the form was and how ideas followed each other and where was the research. And like, I was so focused on the form and the formal play that I almost didn't stop to think, like, what is in it? Like, I don't, and I think that for me, that's why more experimental forms of nonfiction, whether that's, like, there's images and, you know, weird text stuff happening, or if it's just, like, what I just read is, like, one of, it's just, like, a mega paragraph, right? Like, it's just, like, all of these things happening at one time, and there's not one moment or one thing that's really being explored. Like that formal play, like I really feel like it prompts me to be very intimate in a way that I wouldn't be in other kinds of writing.
I think that is really the right word, because as I was reading this, it never felt strange to me. It felt just so intimate. And the, you know, the way the documentation is presented, and then the fact that, you know, we're seeing baby pictures of you, we're seeing baby pictures of your first child, and just it felt intimate was really the word. I was blown away by the intimacy, because I guess that's really where my question came from. I'm totally rambling with this, Chris, but I was thinking as I was reading, I could never do this. I wouldn't even know how to do this. I wouldn't know how to begin a project like this.
It reminds me of, like, you know, I talk about constraints a lot because it helps me get into the work, and it sounds like, you know, the prompts were helping you get into the work because it helps you focus on the prompt itself or the play that you're, you know, like you're playing as you're writing, you're having fun, and the intimacy and your truth is what you take for granted, right? And so you're almost not even paying attention to like that, like you were saying, Chris, you were saying like I wasn't really paying attention to how personal it was, because I was having, you know, I was so concerned with the form and the playing and the prompting. And it's interesting because it's, I think a lot of writers have a hard time into something they want to write, and constraints or prompts can help you get there.
Right.
Well, yeah. A lot of times I had, like, with, you know, the book is in 6 sections, and the first 5, I would say that the last section is the most traditional essay out of all of them, where it's like, I wanted to say a thing and it's like, I just wrote it down. Not that there's not some formal play in there, because it's like me and I can't stop myself. So there's like some weird stuff, but your first five, I think they all have like false versions of themselves that existed before the form actually came to me. Like
versions of themselves.
Yeah. Like where
I love that. Are you saying so like it's a draft, but it's a false version of itself?
Because it's not a draft. It's not a draft if it's not really true. Like,
right.
Like in nonfiction, there are a lot of ways that you could write one thing. And there's the one that's going to get you closest to like whatever it is that you're trying to portray, not like the facts that happened. Because the facts of what happened in the book are extremely narrowly limited. It's a very small number of like actual events that occur. Like, I got pregnant, I had a baby, I moved to Michigan. Like, there's just not like that much happening plot wise. But I sat down to write this essay at some point about how I feel about the fact that looking at baby pictures of Samson, the baby that I made out of my three kids, I only gave birth to one of them, and he's the middle one. I had this essay that was very straightforward, and it was just like words and in order with paragraphs and stuff. And it was about like how I feel about the fact that we look the same, like how complicated those feelings are for me, being like a trans person who has felt alienated from images of myself and then like tried to work on being okay with them and trying to write with them. And then having this kid who just like got to be the boy version of me, you know, like I was so early on in his life, I was so angry and jealous and had all these like very negative and unhealthy feelings. And I think a lot of parents have unhealthy feelings about what their kids mean in their lives. But when I just wrote it straightforwardly, I was like, you're not getting to it. You're just so far away from it still. And then I decided that if I wrote like in epistolary style to my mother about how I felt about my baby pictures, like then maybe it would like be more open and honest. And I think that it is than whatever I tried first, which I haven't looked at in such a long time, but it's just like a false essay about the same thing.
That was my favorite section in the book. The one addressed to your mother, the epistolary one, that one really got me.
Do you feel like the false version of it was a necessary exercise for you to write that so that you could sort of see, okay, no, not that. Or do you feel like it was obfuscation on your part?
No, I don't think that. I'm not in a rush to write like tons and tons and tons of books or things. I don't have some of the pressures that other writers do of needing their writing to sustain them financially or get them tenure. I just like, I'm a person with a 9-to-5 and I write things. So I don't feel pressure to get it right at any particular time. And I feel like for me, the early drafts are necessary because they help me like kind of scout out what what's in there. Like there's often, I'm someone who like can't stop reading about random nonsense while I'm writing an essay. I'll be like, I'm writing an essay about this, but it's actually like about Marie Curie. And then I'll read like biographies and graphic novel. And I'll just like go to the library and get all this random nonsense. And like a lot of times I'm like, all right, this whole Marie Curie section needs to be cut out. So then like, that doesn't mean that work was a waste. It just means I was trying to figure out what to write about, and I eventually found it, and nothing that I did on the way was a particular waste to me.
I'm really glad you brought up the feelings you had about Samson when you first found out that he was a boy, and your immediate reaction was jealousy. I just found that so poignant and so true, because I feel like I'm of two minds. Like I feel like the conflicting emotions that parenthood and birthhood instill in one are like, I feel like that could be like, there's not enough out there about that. You know, like I think about like when I found out I was pregnant with my third and I was filled with rage and sorrow and just helplessness. And there's these feelings that you just have that you don't, you know, like you can't fight them. They're there. And I don't know. I found that to be such an honest, like poignant, hard thing, you know, and I was really glad that it was in the book.
Thanks. Yeah. I think you move through the feelings. Like you're always going to have in my life, I'm always going to have new and different feelings about the meaning of my family members in my life. So totally. I feel like it's okay to write about the bad parts of it all, because I don't like what is happening changes so much. Like Samson was 5 when I finished the book, and now he's like about to turn 8. And it's just like, everything is so different than it was then. Just like, it's going to be in another 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Man, that's true. It is always changing. And I feel like new parents, like as soon as your baby starts sleeping, you're like, all right, I'm good.
Oh God.
And then you find out that it changes again and again and again and again.
But it is such a profound relief. Like, mm-hmm. And I also feel like something interesting about writing the book is that it took place over this period of time that, like, my third child, who's 5 and a half, he is basically not in the book at all. Like very briefly mentioned, even though like he had lived a kind of robust life by that time, he was a toddler, but he was 8 months old when I got to the MFA. And we really didn't have much childcare early on. So like a lot of the writing I was doing had like those baby kind of interruptions. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was writing the last section, like bedtime was kind of normal. And like, I wasn't like, he wasn't falling randomly and hitting his head on surfaces. That time when you're like constant surveillance of my child or else they'll like die somehow.
Right. Oh, Jesus.
So there's like a mental clarity that you can only have once you're out of it.
Mm-hmm. How does it feel? Like, how does having a book out feel? You know, and it can be this specific book or just in general, like when you were thinking, I'm going to have a book out, like, how did you think it was going to feel versus how does it feel?
I went through a lot of phases of feelings.
Right.
Move through the feelings.
Yes, really. When I finished my graduate program and I had a draft of a book and I had somehow magically secured an agent, like, which happened very honestly in a very lucky and fortuitous way for me, I was like, well, I have an agent, but like, it's not like this book's ever going to sell. I mean, look at it, you know. At that point, it literally like fit on 100 pages. Like, I wrote all of the, like, a lot of the little sections, like, were on their own page, and there was even more formal experimentation early on. Like, I was like, it's so nice that my agent believes in me, and I think there's good writing in here, but I'm just gonna, like, find a job. I'm not gonna try to, like, find a writing adjacent job or get a part-time job and try to write a lot more. Like, I'm just gonna, like, have a new life, a new iteration of my life, and maybe I'll write something new and maybe this book will like one day work out somehow. So I got really immersed in a very strange day job that I have in a pediatric oncology clinic. And I had to learn a lot and I had to read a lot, and it's a very rigorous work environment. And it was a new position that I was the first person to be in. So oh, wow. Yeah, the book sold like 3 months after I started the job. I was sitting at my desk. I have 3 office mates. Like, since COVID, I've been working from home, but when I was in the office, and then like they're now back in the office, but my job is like really not site specific. So I am going back slowly. My office mates are 2 social workers and a chaplain, and they knew that I like went to writing school, but I played it. I was just like, yeah, I was just like bored with my life. And like Anna and I like wanted to try living somewhere new. And I like wrote a lot of weird stuff. And like, here's this chapbook that I made. And like, I'm so glad I did that. And I'm so glad that I'm here now at this job, you know, like just very much like didn't talk about it a lot, but I like abruptly left my desk to take this phone call with the editor who ended up acquiring the book and my agent, like the call that you make.
Oh my God.
I was like, all right, I'm going to step out for a minute, and just like went downstairs to the lobby of the hospital and was just like sitting in a quiet area and just like watching all the patients and families come into the clinic. And then I was like, okay, now I'm editing this book and I'm going to have to dive back into like all these hard feelings that I had. And I feel super blessed that I had this distraction of something else in my life that was rigorous. I don't know that the edits would have been as good or I would have been as attentive if I couldn't be like, I'm going to turn off my writer self and I'm going to like go to my desk job. And then I'm going to turn that off and get to sit with this like art that isn't part of my work life. So that helped me a lot stave off the anxiety and all the feelings about like my memoir coming out. And then I had a very intense spike of doom. I think when I first, I think for me, I have like major imposter syndrome, like almost all writers I know. So I was like, sure, it's going to be a book, but like, it's not like anyone will read it or pay attention to it. And like, nothing's going to happen. And it'll just be like something that I did once. And like, that's great. But then the first time I had to do even the most minor kind of like publicity, anything, it sent me like absolutely spiraling into doom. So I was just building up for like, wow, that like Anna, my partner's a workaholic and she like took off publication week. She was just like, I have not seen you in this state before.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Gonna be like, and then someone told me that it was gonna feel super anticlimactic, and I had heard a lot of people say the same thing. But I feel extremely blessed and again very lucky that it felt climactic in a very nice way and all of the bad feelings have passed. I just wanted the day to come and be over. It felt weird. Like, I think everything to me kind of feels like being pregnant, but that, you know, it's like I was so anxious and I was like, what's going to happen? And then once it happened, it was over. So I feel really glad that Tuesday is crossed out. I also have to admit, this is super dorky, but like, I just feel like your podcast is such a great thing to exist in the world and something I wanted. And I was like, it's at the end of the week. So like, if you get through like some of the other stuff you have to do, like this is going to be like a good part.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Thank you, Chris.
We were something to look forward to. That's all I've ever wanted in my life.
I love it.
Wow.
It's
thank you.
So nice just to like hear other writers talk about like their jobs and things that they're thinking about. Like, I just really appreciate that it exists.
We're not alone, thank even you. As we're yeah. alone at 4 a.m. typing.
Chris, I'm so impressed with your just general attitude towards everything. I got to be honest. I mean, just the way you're speaking about your work, and I love that you have so much respect for the work you're doing. I mean, obviously what you're doing sounds incredibly important, but I just like that writing is a piece of your life, but you aren't, I don't know. I just am really impressed by your overall approach to all
this. Yeah, I think like Alex and I talk about this, and this is kind of the impetus for I'm a Writer, But is kind of exploring the writer's life that doesn't have anything to do.
I think a lot about what it would be like to try to find a job that's either like in the writing industry or like, I don't know, trying to dip my toe into academia, which feels like a doomed enterprise from the start. Any of that. And I'm like, would I struggle with having my entire life be cooked up in this like so-called writing career that I suppose I now have to admit that I have, you know, like I might want it one day, but right now I'm kind of like, I don't know that I'm there yet.
Yeah. Do you have ambitions? You know, I know you said like, I might write another thing. Like, do you have sort of designs on another book or some other format?
I don't, I feel like the obsessive pull that this project had on me, I don't have that right now. I have, I just signed up for Scrivener.
Ooh.
Okay.
I know. I wrote this book in InDesign, which is like, I know. I can't say I don't recommend it because it turned out okay, but I couldn't like deal with word processing. So I learned InDesign on my own.
Oh my God.
I'm sure that whoever designed, like Jordan, who designed this book, was probably like, this fucking guy.
Yeah, Zach Dotson was talking about that too when he was writing his Bats of the Republic. And I think the one he's writing now is in InDesign, and how obnoxious that was for the publisher.
Well, I was just like, every time I hit enter, everything's ruined. I can't in Word, I can't do it. So I'm not doing that anymore because I don't have like a visual project, but I do have a couple of like Scrivener, like working documents that are like a couple thousand pages long, and like one's fiction and one's nonfiction. And I'm just kind of like writing into them and being like, I wish I had something that like had totally grabbed hold of me, but I don't. But I have a totally made up goal of writing 7 books in my life.
Oh.
It feels like a good number, right? It feels like a good number.
Yeah,
it's just a nice thing to say. It's just like 7 books. All right.
I made a fatal error. Like my kids, this week they remembered that I am a writer because my partner like planned, like got a cake and they got like decorations for like when I, you know, came out of bed on launch day. And then they have seen it in a bookstore, which they're
amazing.
You know, like it's real, but they're always like, oh, I forget, you know, they'd like literally forget that this is a thing because they're that I have like a day job, but they can't handle the thought that I have other work to do.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I told them at dinner one night that my goal is to write 7 books. And they told me that, well, I've only written one and I'm already 30. So they were like, you should write a 6-part middle time. This is ingenious, but I cannot do that without your help, guys. Like I don't know about the time travel genre.
Oh my God. Well, that's a little daunting because we're almost exactly the same age, Chris, and I know your exact birthday because it's in the book, and 7 books is a lot for me. So God, I don't know. Maybe you can take my 7 too and do 14.
Well, there's this thing in CrossFit where like, you know, they have these workouts where they tell you an amount of time you have, and then they tell you like what you need to do in one round. It's called an AMRAP. It's like as many rounds as possible. So it'll be like 15 minutes, as many rounds as possible of like 10 burpees, 10 box jumps, and like 10 overhead squats. And then you just like have to do it for 15 minutes. Okay. And I have this very serious problem as a not athlete, as a person who attends the gym, where I'll set a goal. I'll be like, my goal is to do 5 rounds. And then if I get to 5 rounds and there's 5 minutes left, I just, my pace totally changes. The laziest person ever. Like the coach looking, because if not, I'm just standing around. Like I know I have to set a goal that I probably like can't reach unless like I have an amazing, rich artistic life. Cause otherwise, if I was like, I'll write 3 books, then like I'll get to 3 and just be like, that was fun.
Check. Well, Chris, this was amazing.
So fun. Thank you.
I appreciate you all having me on so much. Like I said, it was something I was looking forward to. I got to read new shit. I'm so happy.
Oh, we are so happy. Your new shit is incredible.
Awesome.
Please keep going.
Keep
and I know you will, because you're CrossFitting your writing.
That's right.
AMRAP.
I'm trying to AMRAP.
That was great.
I forgot to tell him Ben's corner opinion, which is, you know, he was talking about, oh, you know, it's short. And I know that's hard. Ben's firm opinion on books and movies is nobody has ever sat around going, oh, that should have been longer.
He's right.
He's right. Most people are like, oh, that should have been shorter. Right. Like,
yeah,
all the Avengers movies can be like 30 minutes shorter than they are.
Sure.
I've never read a book and thought, that needed 100 more pages or 20 more pages. Never. So Chris, never. Your book is perfect.
Literally never. Yeah.
Your book, Chris's is the perfect, book is perfect length. Yes.
It doesn't, like, it feels the right length. My question was so rambling and stupid that it came off like I was not saying it. It really does feel appropriate, but I just remember thinking, like, if I was trying to excavate my own life for a similar project, which I couldn't do, but I would have no idea how to parse it. I don't know. I just was so impressed by the book. I really was.
It makes me think of, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but Paul Yoon's novel, which was like
The Mountain?
Which was like 500 pages and he whittled it down to like 150 pages.
Oh, I did not know that was the process with that.
Yeah. So it was like a process of like extreme honing, you know, like with a small knife. Mm-hmm. And restraint. And you can kind of see that in Chris's book too, like, mm-hmm. and maybe the prompt writing really helps with that, you know, it like gets you in, gets you out.
Right.
And I just love the idea of a false version of itself.
That was great.
And that being different than a draft.
It's such a hopeful phrasing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice.
I loved that. So yes, everybody, get Chris's book.
It's a nice yellow book. There should be more yellow books.
The Natural Mother of the Child, A Memoir of Non-Binary Parenthood, Chris Malcolm Belk. It's wonderful. It's fun to read because it's so adventurous and playful, even as it's dealing with some pretty hard stuff. I finished reading Melanie Finn's book and I fucking loved it. I wanted to run around my house. It ends so beautifully, so perfect. I want to talk to her because it feels like she started writing it before the pandemic and then picked it back up during the pandemic. I don't know.
Really?
And finished it then. I don't know. I definitely want to talk to her about like the two halves of it. This is really cool. So I did this event with Megan Steelstra called Geek Out Through Story Studio, where we talked about Mary Ruffel's essay, The Pause, which is all about menopause. And Megan and I are in our 40s, so obviously we're thinking about that. And Rebecca Mackay was like sort of being the host. And at the end of it, we were talking about how we don't really see a lot of menopausal characters in fiction. Hmm. And somebody, you know, needs to jump on that. And this book, Melanie Finn's book, The Hair, in the second half, it's all from the point of view of the same character of the first half, but she's in her 50s and she's menopausal and it's wonderful. It is so wonderful. Anyway, so please.
I can't even think of one menopausal character.
I know, right?
Is there like a famous movie with one? I can't even think of one.
I don't know. I think like, because she specifically, the character in the book In the Hair specifically talks about her hot flashes and menopause and stuff like that and being invisible to men and like her sex drive being gone. And so like, it is like overtly about that. The book is overtly about womanhood, and like being prey almost, hence the title, The Hair. But anyway, Jesus. But I feel like you could argue that like Mayor of Easttown is menopausal. You could argue that like in The Upside of Anger, What's Her Name is menopausal, which is a movie from, I don't know, 20 years ago. Right.
Which one is that?
Oh God. What is her name? Honey, who was in The Upside of Anger? Joan Allen.
Oh, I love Joan Allen.
Joan Allen, who could play Melanie Finn in the movie, or Melanie Finn could play her. They kind of look the same, but,
there you go.
I would say Joan Allen in The Upside of Anger is menopausal. You could argue like Samantha goes through menopause in Sex and the City, but yeah, like there's not enough because it is such a wild time in a woman's life. So I think it could be really fun. That's your prompt, everyone. Chris, that's your prompt. Everybody write about a menopausal woman.
Can't wait.
Something. Yeah. Alex, you too.
Yeah, I'm on it. I'm doing it right now.
But now I'm reading Great Circle and I'm like 150 pages in and it's incredible in a different way.
I started Night Bitch.
Oh, that's my next one.
Galley. Mm-hmm. It's my kind of book. It goes right away. It's like, okay, here we go.
I love it.
Yes.
And I can tell that's a book that I'm not going to go, this should have been longer.
No, it's, I mean, you pick it up, it's right length. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's nice and trim. I'm going to guess 280, 270, something.
I don't have it next to me or else I would tell you.
I don't know. It's upstairs.
Mine's next to my bed, my beddy boy. Yeah, that's the book I'm reading next and I'm very excited. And we're going to talk to Rachel next month. And I've been waking up every morning to write. Some fun things have been happening in there in that book. But, you know, like part of me is like, I'm going to go back and read these thousands of words that I've been writing at 5 a.m.
Yes.
And be like, these are fever dreams.
Oh my God.
You know, like, what the hell am I talking about here? But oh well, you know?
I've been reading mostly on my phone during my lunch breaks at work, because when I'm home, my book is on submission right now. And so I'm trying to like not think of, like, I've just been watching Skyfall over and over.
Mm. What is
I don't know. I don't know if you're a, that's the, it's a James Bond movie.
Oh.
But I love it. I love Skyfall. I could watch it every night. If there was,
are you watching it on the TV?
I'm watching it on the TV. That's on the, that goes on the TV.
Okay. And, is Britt watching it too?
Oh, no, no, no.
Okay.
No. It's just, this is like, viewing. This is like between the hours of like 12:30 and 3 a.m. until I fall asleep. I just, I'm like, you know, it's Skyfall time.
Don't you wake up at 3 a.m.?
Tomorrow I do, but not every day.
Oh my God. Why don't you not put Skyfall on and just go to sleep? Skyfall into bed.
No, it's a good movie. Have you seen it? It's pretty fun.
No, I am intrigued.
Have you really never seen it?
No.
Which
one is it?
Oh man. It's the one with Javier Bardem as the bad guy.
Honey, have I seen Skyfall? He goes, oh, is that the one where he has a fancy watch?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, Ben. Sam Mendes directed it. You know, like fancy Sam Mendes? Well, there you go. Jesus Christ.
I'm sure it's beautiful. I would like it. I've just never seen it.
You've seen James Bond movies before, though, right?
I feel like I saw one Daniel Craig one.
Okay. Maybe you've probably seen this one. This is probably the one you saw.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking it up right now. Okay.
It's on Hulu, your favorite thing.
It was on a disc we got from Netflix.
Okay. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, this might be the one we saw, honey. It was in 2012.
Great year.
Oh, maybe not. No, because I don't think I saw one with Javier Bardem.
Oh, you got to watch it. It's just going to change your life.
Honey, it's on Hulu, the Hulu Sons.
Oh, absolutely.
He's no longer there. I don't know where he went.
Does it have like a long theme song by a pop star when you're like,
yeah, fucking Adele, Ben.
It's Adele, honey. Jeez.
He's probably heard that song a million times.
I think I have heard that song.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I got. Skyfall. That's
Skyfall.
You know, no thoughts, just James Bond.
Okay. I used to watch It's Complicated over and over. Is that the same thing?
Oh my God. What the fuck is It's Complicated? Which one is that?
It's a Nancy Meyers film.
Oh, okay. Wait,
starring,
I've seen it then.
Meryl Streep, Alec Baldwin, and Steve Martin.
I've seen this. Yeah.
And I don't know why, but it just spoke to me. And especially the scene where they dance to Don't Do Me Like That by Tom Petty.
Great song.
They talk about her 40th birthday party.
One of the all-time posters I'm looking at right now for It's Complicated.
Oh my God, I have to look it up.
God.
I don't know why. And the movie's objectively like just okay. Mm-hmm. But there's just something, and it goes beyond like, you know, like Nancy Meyers is like all about like the rich white lady storyline.
Sure.
Beautiful kitchens. Speaking of menopause or postmenopausal characters, Nancy Meyers films.
Right. There you go.
So I'm sure it's like eye candy on some part, but it's also just like, I don't know, Meryl Streep. I could watch her in anything.
Sure.
Anyway, so that's my Skyfall, but I actually haven't watched it in years.
Full circle. Guess where Nancy Meyers was born?
Oh my God. Marquette.
Philadelphia, home of Chris Belk.
Wow. Pretty cool. On that note.
On that note, we did it.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm a Writer Butt is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop.
Yeah, yeah.